Let's open to John chapter 13, please. We want to talk about social media this morning. And we'll start with a verse. I'm going to give you some secular information and to try to, get a view of the challenges that are out there. And then we'll come back to the Bible for answers to those challenges. That's the way this lesson will work. And I want to start by saying I'm not against social media. I don't think it's a completely wrong thing. I think there's dangers to it. I've preached sermons before about the good things about it, ways we can use it. As a Christian, it's a tool that can be used in a lot of good ways. And we can certainly post and find sermons online and through YouTube and Facebook and all those kind of good things that can be done. And so I'm not just completely against it. But there are dangers that we need to be aware of, and that's what this sermon is especially about. John 13 and verse 34, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. Love is the hallmark of the disciples of Jesus. And all through the Bible we see that instruction. God's people will love their neighbors. You think about the Good Samaritan loving his neighbor. God's people will overcome prejudices to build those relationships. Think about Peter and Cornelius. Peter, a Jew, in the house of Cornelius, a Gentile. God's people will spend time sharing their lives together and worshiping together. You look at the saints in Acts chapter 2 and how many people are baptized, and now they're brothers and sisters in Christ and enjoying that unique and special relationship. And you notice what all those examples have in common is that people having relationship with each other, loving one another just as they're instructed to do. If you can imagine having a time machine and getting somebody from 1990, let's say, and bringing them forward to 2026 and trying to prepare them for what life is like today and saying, okay, we've got this thing now called social media. What's that? Okay, well, it's hard to explain, but it's the idea that you can communicate and share stories and pictures and videos and everything through phones and the computer and the internet and with anybody in the world, just instantly. You can communicate with anybody in the world and share those experiences. And they might think, well, that sounds pretty good. And there is a lot of good to social media. And that's probably what we all thought, maybe when that started to come out. But those of us who have lived through the past few decades and seen what it's turned into, what it's become used for, and have seen that phenomenon sweep the globe, know that while there's great potential for good, there's also a lot of evil in social media, a lot of dangers. And even though it's a great tool and can be used and is used every single day in good ways and in spiritual ways, there are some dangers that we need to watch out for, and that's what we're talking about now. One of the things we may not have seen coming is that dark side to social media and how harmful and dangerous it can be, even from a secular sense. People understand this, document this, study this, but especially from a spiritual sense. Social media has become one of the greatest, most influential changes in our society. And it's something that we need to be thinking about as Christians on how to handle that and face those challenges. Because for a lot of people, it's the worst thing to ever happen. It's ruined their lives. And we need to just face that reality. So let me give you some secular information, just kind of paint the picture of how evil is used in social media and the bad influence that it can have. When Alexis Spence was 11, she opened an Instagram account on her iPad without her parents knowing. As Alexis consumed more and more thinspiration content, she began starving herself. By 15, she had developed a severe eating disorder and spent time in a residential treatment center as she battled anorexia and suicidal thoughts. Alexis survived but still struggles with mental health issues and was not able to leave home for college. There's one of the things that social media has really inflamed. There's always been the temptation to focus on the body and how you look and become over-concentrated and over-focused on that. But this has kind of put gas on the flames. Here's another story. A blackmailer posing as a teen girl talked a 15-year-old Utah boy into sending nude pictures of himself on Snapchat. The user threatened to send screenshots of the images to his friends and family unless he paid $200. He was so devastated, he took his own life. Here's a third story. Selena Rodriguez opened an Instagram account when she was 10, and before long she was using it at all hours of the day and night. When she wasn't on Instagram, she was on Snapchat. Several adult men asked her to send nude pictures and videos of herself. Selena was eventually hospitalized for depression and self-harm. At the age of 11, she died by suicide. horrible stories. I mean, we could just read story after story after story. And I know those are extreme examples. Not everybody does that. I recognize that. Those are extreme examples, but there are a lot of examples like that, unfortunately. Those things don't happen to everybody, but in the larger sets of data, there are definitely alarming trends. Let me put some graphs up here. I know you can't see these from where you're sitting, but maybe you can kind of generally see the lines are going up here. This is a graph representing symptoms of depression in U.S. teens, 1991 to 2023. And the three different lines there are, can't do anything right, do not enjoy life, and my life is not useful. And you see they're all trending upward, correlating to the spike in smartphones and social media usage. Here's another graph. You can see the downward trend. In this graph, the three lines are 8th, 10th, and 12th graders. It's the percent of U.S. teens who get together with their friends almost every day. It's interesting. You know, you ask somebody who's from an older generation who experienced childhood before the 2000s, and they'll tell you, you know, I was either working, I was doing chores, mom and dad had me doing something, or I was running around playing with the kids. And a lot of times you can tell where the neighborhood kids were by where the bikes were in somebody's front yard. You remember that? And kids were just running around and playing baseball and doing all that kind of stuff. And it's just not that way anymore. Drive through a neighborhood. How many kids are out playing? There's some. But most people are inside on a screen. And so the amount of time spent together has just plummeted, just in social interaction. Here's a graph showing rates of clinical level depression, 12 to 17-year-olds, 2005 to 2023. And you see the upward trend there. The bottom line is boys. The top line is girls. So it's more pronounced in girls in this study, at least. Rates of depression have correlated with the rise of social media. And then here's a fourth graph. You see the upward trend there. Social media use and depression. This is in UK teens, United Kingdom. And this one shows, you probably can't see the bottom row there, but it's 1 hour, 1 to 2 hours, 3 to 4 hours, 5+ hours. So in other words, the correlation is between more social media uses, depression goes up. Strong correlation between time spent on social media and depression. But the good news is things can change pretty quickly. Let me read this excerpt to you that I think will be pretty empowering to parents of one study that was done. When people cut back on social media for a few weeks, they end up happier and less depressed compared to those who keep using social media as they always have. A study of Danish families found that after 2 weeks with minimal access to screens, kids and teens were less angry and less depressed compared to a control group who did not change their screen use. These studies are experiments, also known as randomized control trials, the gold standard in science for showing causation because people are randomly assigned to either cut back on social media time or not, which equalizes extraneous factors. These studies mean social media causes depression, not just that the two are linked. In June 2024, the U.S. Surgeon General called for warning labels to be placed on social media to make parents aware of their potential harm to teens' mental health. So if you're a parent, you're looking at this and thinking, what am I going to do? My kids, they're all into it, just like you're talking about in these statistics. It can change pretty quick. In this study, just a 2-3 weeks, and the habits are already changing. The trends are already changing in at least these study participants' lives. I'm getting a lot of these graphs and statistics from this book, 10 Rules for Raising Kids in a High-Tech World. Jean Twenge, I like to read a bunch of her books. Interesting stuff. Okay, so there's some information for you to consider, just the state of the way things are now. And let me just make three quick points. First of all, I think we have to recognize parents today are facing a pretty unique challenge. The lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, the pride of life, these sins that are involved, in this, they've always been around. There's nothing new under the sun. It's always been. We can read back in Genesis, the same kinds of sins, same kind of temptations. But we are the first generation to see these temptations packaged this way and this easily accessible. It's unique in the history of the world. Secondly, let's not overreact. If your teen has an Instagram account, it doesn't mean they're going to hell. And it doesn't mean they're lost, and it doesn't mean that they have depression. So let's not overreact to this. But it is wise to know the dangers that are there, and to think about some safeguards, some rules, some wisdom that needs to be put in place in the family. And number three, the Bible is going to have the answers. That's what we want to spend the rest of our time talking about. Look in Genesis chapter 1, please. Genesis chapter 1. Here's what I would suggest, and we're reading the Bible for these principles, and if And if my experience living in a college town for 23 years and just seeing, making some observations there means anything, let's just kind of combine those things together. Here's what I believe the Bible would teach us to do. First of all, make sure your daughters and sons know how valuable they are. In other words, don't make them go out looking for validation and value from somebody else through social media, especially from strangers. In Genesis chapter 1 and verse 26, then God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and over the cattle and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female, he created them. And so humans are made in the image of God. That defines our value from the outset. We are valuable because God made us in his image. Before you've done anything, you're created with that value. Other things in God's physical creation are awesome. Sunsets are beautiful. I like a good sunset. I like an awesome tree, how tall and beautiful they are. I like looking at a cool spider web. Dogs are fun. All kinds of things in God's creation are wonderful, but humans are unique among all of God's creation because he made us to be like him. We're made in his image. In chapter 9, Genesis chapter 9, after Noah and his family are getting off of the ark and God is talking to them, Genesis 9 and verse 3, "Every moving thing that is alive shall be food for you. I give all to you as I gave the green plant." Okay, so you can kill these animals and eat them. Verse 6, though, "Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed. For, in the image of God, he made man." Why is murder wrong? What is it that's morally different from swatting a mosquito or killing a deer and killing a human being, murdering a human being? Well, verse 6 says, "For, in the image of God, he made man." That's the difference. There's the value. We have a spiritual and moral capacity that allows us to think and reason and make choices, and we have an eternal soul that will exist forever. There's our value. In John chapter 4, do you remember when John is talking with this woman at the well? In John chapter 4, in this interaction with her, and one of the statements that he makes in verse 24, John 4, 24 is this, "God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth." We use this element of ourselves, this inner person, this spirit that God created us with, and we're able to do that, unique among God's creation, to worship him in spirit and in truth. Look in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, please. This great passage we have about resurrection. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, and down in verse 50, "Now I say this, brethren, that flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God, nor does the perishable inherit the imperishable. Behold, I tell you a mystery, we shall not all sleep, but we will all be changed. In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet, for the trumpet will sound, and the dead will be raised imperishable, and we will be changed. For this perishable must put on the imperishable, and this mortal must put on immortality." So we have an existence beyond this physical body. We're going to undergo this change, as he puts it here. We're going to put on this immortality and this imperishable and what he describes here. You think about how much time and effort we put into the appearance of this physical body, dressing it up and making it up and all the stuff we do to our body. And some of that's okay. We need to put on some clothes after all. We need to take care of ourselves. God gave us this body and we're using it on the ways that are right. But let's keep it in perspective, right? This is not the sole focus. This body is not me. I'm going to exist when this body is dead. I will still exist somewhere once I've gone through this change. Look in 1 Peter chapter 1, please. 1 Peter chapter 1. Just trying to string some verses together here to show our value, what makes us unique, thanks to God, and the capacity we have, thanks to God, to serve him and to be like him. In 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 14, "As obedient children, do not be conformed to the former lusts which were yours in your ignorance, but like the Holy One who called you, be holy yourselves, also in all your behavior, because it's written, 'You shall be holy, for I am holy.'" Can a horse imitate the holiness of God? Or a dolphin, or a tree, or a clump of dirt? Not in the way a human can. This is saying you can be holy. Be holy yourselves in all your behavior. That's a capacity that we have. We are spiritual beings like him. We have that capacity. That's what makes us valuable. Not sending a picture of your body parts on Snapchat. In 1 Peter 3, in verse 3, your adornment must not be merely external, braiding the hair and wearing gold jewelry, putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. What's being emphasized there? Well, the inner person. The outside is there, and a lot of people are pretty, or a lot of people are handsome. But what this is talking about, the inner person, the spiritual side. And God created humans, so He certainly knows the valuable part. And that's what He's talking about here. He looks at the hidden person of the heart. That's the part that's precious in His sight. So what do we do with that? Our topic today is social media. Here's these principles from God's Word, the value that's inside us. We're made in His image. We can be holy. We have that capacity. Our inner person, that's the part that's valuable and that what God is looking for. So what do we do with that? Parents, teach your kids, especially your daughters, according to these statistics, but daughters and sons, to know that their value comes from God, being made in God's image. That's why they're special. That's what makes them unique among creation. That's why they're valuable. Her value does not come from knowing how to pose so as to accentuate her curves or how to use those filters on all the apps. Some of those are just fun and harmless. Or how to do her makeup or to do the latest TikTok challenge. That's not where her value is. Her value is that she's made in the image of God. Jordan 15 says, nobody really slides up on your story unless you post something like really revealing. If you post your face, they'll just kind of like go past it. But if you like post your body parts with it, they'll be like, oh, you look so good. I tell you what, when I was 15, I wouldn't have to deal with that. Social media didn't exist yet. And maybe it's different for females and males. Maybe I wouldn't have dealt with it as much. But this is what our kids are facing today. Tell them over and over and over how valuable they are because they're made in the image of God. Let's not let our sons and daughters go out into the world searching for validation, looking for value in something else. They shouldn't be yearning for superficial likes and shares. Let's give them a steady diet of conversations and comments about biblical truth the entire time they're growing up. That way they already know their value. They understand the truth about them and their soul and their fellowship with God. We don't want them wondering, am I good? We want them knowing, God loves me. Send them out into the world with that knowledge. Number two, teach your sons and daughters to be pure. Go back to the book of Job, please. Job, a good example. Job's a good man. In Job chapter 1 and in verse 1, it introduces the story by saying there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was blameless, upright, fearing God, and turning away from evil. So Job is a good man, and as we turn to chapter 31, we see one of the things he did that was good. In Job 31, in verse 1, I have made a covenant with my eyes, how then could I gaze at a virgin? Here's this covenant that Job has made, this decision he's made not to look at women in inappropriate ways. By the way, there's a company out there called Covenant Eyes, I'm assuming based on that verse, that we used at one point when our kids were little for internet filtering and those kinds of things. Good website, good source if you're looking for something. Peter warned about people who are doing the opposite of what Job is talking about here. Job is saying, I made a covenant with my eyes, how then could I gaze at a virgin? Peter talked about people doing the opposite, having eyes full of adultery that never cease from sin. 2 Peter 2 in verse 14. And so parents and grandparents, to whatever extent you can wield some influence on your grandkids, we need to raise our kids, especially our sons, based on the statistics, to bounce their eyes away from immodest people and things that cause lust, to be very careful about their heart and what they're thinking about. Look in 1 John chapter 2, please, as it lists these sins. And I mentioned last night back home, I'm doing a series of Bible classes on lust of the eyes. We're talking about some of these very verses. 1 John 2 and verses 16 and 17. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the boastful pride of life is not from the Father, but is from the world. The world is passing away and also its lust, but the one who does the will of God lives forever. So this is not a gray area in the world. You know, talk to some people and I guess because of hard hearts, because we get callous to sin if we're exposed to it and engage in it long enough. Sometimes the question is even, is this even wrong? It's wrong. Pornography is wrong. And not just pornography, but lots of things on YouTube Shorts and Instagram Reels and all that stuff where there's immodesty and sensuality and stuff that is not appropriate for us to be looking about and thinking about outside of marriage. We need to know that is wrong. And that choosing that, as this is explaining it here, you're choosing not to go to heaven. It's that big of a deal. It is a sin. It's clear. It's not a gray area. This is certainly wrong. Look in Matthew chapter 5. Jesus talked about this in His great Sermon on the Mount. Matthew chapter 5. I'm looking at verses 27 and 28. Matthew 5 and in verse 27. He said, "You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart." And so this is a serious temptation. The devil wins billions of souls with this. We have got to teach our kids and our grandkids some strategies and habits that will help them guard their eyes and their souls. TikTok is known for having the most addictive algorithm out there. When the Wall Street Journal created fake accounts on TikTok for 13-year-olds, they were almost immediately shown videos about drug use and paid pornography sites. A TikTok spokesperson told the journal that the app doesn't filter feeds to minors. They get the same videos as adults. Let that sink in. They're giving the same videos to minors as they would to adults. Apple told TikTok to rate the app as 17 plus on the App Store, but TikTok refused. Kept it listed as 12 plus. So what does that tell you? You see things like that, investigative stories that expose things like that. Well, that tells you that the companies are not going to regulate themselves. This is business. They're trying to make money. And the way they make money is for us to keep scrolling. They're not trying to limit that. They're trying to emphasize that. They're trying to make us addicted to this. You talk about the algorithms, and they are extremely advanced at making us keep scrolling into all these things because they make more money doing that. And even if the government or Apple or Google or one of these companies manages to put some restrictions on social media, I guarantee you it's not going to be to the biblical standard. It might be they're trying to avoid some prosecution criminally or something like that, but they're not trying to get it down to the biblical standard. We know that much. And even if they did, there are workarounds. Filters are good. Parent settings on phones, those things are good. Nothing is foolproof. Really, the core thing we're trying to get at is the heart. We're trying to teach purity. And so, as parents, you might use, and I encourage you to use something, some kind of technology, some kind of filter, some sort of reporting thing. We used Accountable to You for a long time in our family. It's another good company. Something like that that helps, that puts some guardrails there so that maybe nothing accidentally comes on the screen, that sort of stuff. All that is good. But ultimately, the foundation issue is the heart. We want to raise our kids so they're not seeking it out on purpose. Temptations are going to be there. And even when they're not looking, stuff finds them. Just like this is talking about stuff. Those videos are just going to be popped up there to see if you're interested, and then it will enter your algorithm. So we need to do the best we can to teach the heart, to get the heart ready to face those temptations. It's way, way, way too easy to see explicit pictures and videos these days. It's never been easier in the history of the world. This is not a new sin. A lust of the eyes is not a new sin, but it is just gas has been thrown on the fire because of this technology that's available. And as parents, we just have to realize that and meet that challenge head on. And we do that, first of all, by teaching and training our hearts and our kids' hearts to submit to King Jesus. This sin uses the eyes, but it's about the heart. And so from day one, let's teach our kids and grandkids about purity, about real love, about real relationships, about eternity, about forgiveness, and about Satan's temptations, and how to repent and get back on track after a failure. All those things are going to be needed. And so the issue is here now. It's gigantic. And it's not going away. Screens are here. Social media is here. We can't ignore it. But thank God for His Son. Thank God for forgiveness. Thank God for His Word that gives us this wisdom and this guidance. Number three. Did it go off? Well, if it comes back on, good. If not, that's okay. It's been going off and on. Craig and Michael were helping with it. Maybe if I wiggle it a little bit, something good will happen. But if we don't see any more, that's fine. I'll keep advancing it in case it comes back on. You'll see what I'm talking about. Look in Matthew chapter 5, please. Here's the point I'm on now. Help them grow comfortable with being different from the world. Help them grow comfortable with being different from the world. People eventually probably are tired of hearing me say that. It is so important. And I try to preach that and work that into tons of sermons and tons of Bible classes there. Teach your kids to be comfortable being different. That their ultimate goal in life is not to fit in and go along with everybody and everything that's happening at school and at work and everything else. Matthew 5 and verse 29, if your rod eye makes you stumble, tear it out and throw it from you. For it's better for you to lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. If your right hand makes you stumble, cut it off and throw it from you. For it is better for you to lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. And so whatever it takes, heaven is worth it. If you have to tear out Instagram and cut off Snapchat, so be it. It's worth it if we'll go to heaven. And maybe a young person says, or anybody might say, well, then I'll be different. Everybody else has these things, has these apps. I need to stay on my snap streak and all that. I'm going to be different if I don't have it. Exactly. That's what we're aiming for. We want to be different. We're the people of God. Our job is not to fit in with the world. In Matthew chapter 7 and verse 13, enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is broad that leads to destruction, and there are many who enter through it. For the gate is small and the way is narrow that leads to life, and there are few who find it. Obviously, we want to be one of the few, not part of the many. And again, it's not saying that every social media thing is bad. That, you know, YouTube is social media. It's not saying everything on YouTube is bad. It's not saying everything on Instagram or Facebook is bad, that it's only evil out there. But sometimes I might have to make special rules for myself that the Bible does not bind, but it's just for me. I'm just going to put a guardrail up, and I'm not even going to download that app because I just don't want the temptation in my life. I can't lose the boxing ring. I can't lose the boxing match if I don't get in the ring. And so it's that kind of idea. So we're back now. So that's good. So parents, be willing to be the, quote, bad guy who is more concerned with your child getting into heaven than fitting in with friends. That's the priority. So delay, minimize, filter social media. Be on top of that. Do whatever it takes to help them fight and win this ongoing battle. Here's a little secret that I think would be worth uncovering. Teens often feel addicted and know that what they're seeing is bad for their mental health, but feel unable to stop themselves, concluded Meta's internal research on Instagram. Meta is the company that owns Facebook and Instagram. So this is their own research about their own products, and it turns out negative. Meta found that the platform made body image issues worse for 1 in 3 teen girls. Academic research has also linked Instagram to eating disorders and body image issues. Nearly 6 out of 10 people, including Instagram users themselves, said they would prefer to live in a world without Instagram. Look in Romans chapter 12, please. Christians do not mindlessly follow the herd. Romans chapter 12 and verse 2, and do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. Our focus is on the will of God. Our focus is not trying to conform to the world. Be like everybody else. It's not saying you're just trying to be weird for the sake of being weird, but it is saying I'm willing to be weird if that's what it takes in a certain area of my life in order to do what's right and stay away from evil. Because going to heaven, glorifying God while I'm on earth is my goal. Snapchat has snap streaks, which is the number of days two users have snapped each other, a supposed measure of the strength of a friendship. When I ask middle and high school students, this is Dr. Twingy, when I ask middle and high school students how many do snap streaks, about a third of their hands go up. When I ask how many really like snap streaks, nearly all the hands go down. It's the classic addict's narrative. They're doing something even though they don't really like it. They're trapped. That's interesting. They're doing it. They feel like they're trapped in this app and doing these snap streaks and things like that. Social media will probably be the first huge opportunity that our sons and daughters have to stick out from the crowd, to not do what everybody else is doing, and to learn to feel comfortable about that. That's an important thing for our kids. I remember telling Tanner and Allie when they were little, you know, there's coming a time when you're going to be different. Just expect that you're going to be different. You're going to be doing different things than other families. They have different rules in their family. This is what our family does. We need to just look at it like that, prepare our kids like that, that our job is not to be like the world. We're not trying to conform to the world. Be ready, be comfortable being different. And to have a life that's not measured by likes or streaks or DMs or followers or all of that stuff. Look in Matthew chapter 5, please. I hope you'll use this sermon as kind of a catalyst, maybe to have some conversations at home to say, you know, go home tonight or tomorrow or next week and say, you know that sermon, let's have a family conversation about that. So let me finish with this verse, Matthew 5 and verse 16. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Whether with social media or through social media or without social media, that's what we're trying to do. Let our light shine. And may God help us to do that in a world that has changed and where gas has been thrown on the flames of this temptation. Help us do the right thing. Help us to have the wisdom to do what's right. Thank you for your attention. I know this is a topic that I think grabs a lot of people's attention. We need to apply God's wisdom to it just like anything else. If we can help you this morning to come to God, to restore yourself to God, if you've made a mistake in this area or some other, if you want the prayers and encouragement of the brethren here, however we can help you spiritually, please come forward while we stand and sing to encourage you.